Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I'm glad you're here. Time and distance is no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope that something in the next hour shines a light for you and helps you move forward. Have you ever felt a calling, a knowing that is so strong and so deep that you would follow it wherever it leads? What are the ways in which we are called to greater love, greater compassion in our lives? Well, my guest on today's show is Kimberly Braun, and she's here to share her rich experience of self and spirit as she continues to follow that call of compassion and love. It led Kimberly to more than 10 years in religious community and then called her into the world as a minister, author, meditation teacher, and speaker. Are you ready to meet her? Kimberly Braun lived for more than 10 years immersed in silence as a Carmelite nun. In 2001, she left the monastery and today lives in Boulder, Colorado. She completed her master's in theology in 2001 with a concentration on the adult spiritual journey and her ordination as a minister. She teaches essence meditation classes, leads retreats and workshops, including yearly stints as a meditation faculty at Omega Institute in New York. Kimberly is the author of Love Calls, Insights of a Former Carmelite Nun, and you can find out more about Kimberly and her work at kimberlybraun.com. Kimberly, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you today.
I'm very glad that you're here. As we're beginning, I can't just throw out something like you spent 10 years as a Carmelite nun and then just dance over that and go on to the next stuff. What can you share a little bit about your journey, about what call led you to that place?
Yes, and I think that all children have many, many experiences where they are absorbed into the present moment, where they experience a oneness that shows up in a lot of different ways. It could show up as happiness. It could show up in stillness. It could show up as wisdom. And so like all children, I had many of those experiences. And when I did have them, they would catch me up in this place that was very timeless. Incredibly, it was brimming with an excitement and a simplicity. And as I had these experiences in nature and in ritual, I realized deeply that that's what happiness was about, at least for me. And with that really deep, deep insight, all my life has been impelled by that. I've danced in and out of contemplative leanings, as I like to put it. In my teen years, I experienced a lot of gifts, healing gifts, and I also experienced the turmoil of not understanding who I was as a human being and understanding my passions. And so I danced in and out with this sense of all things being and becoming in the divine. And I had a huge breakthrough when I was 19, and that breakthrough was on so much of a cellular level that my absorption into ecstatic states went out the roof. I found myself for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours at a time being lost in this white sense of merging with the divine. It felt like being pursued by the divine. It felt like we were making love, and the bliss was tremendous. And in the wake of that, my mind and my heart were enlivened and maturing as well. So ultimately, feeling such a fire of love within, I just had to be with the beloved. And when I was 24, I entered the monastery. So it wasn't so much a choice of what would be best for me or a goal I wish to move towards in self-realization. It was that raw sort of guttural, I am on fire with love and I need more. And that's what led me to join the monastery and give myself the space and time to be with this lover, to learn about myself, to grow in understanding what it means to communicate in the world, because we communicate on so many different levels. We effect, our lives effect and ripple through the cosmos in so many unknown ways to ourselves. And I just wanted to play in that playground. And monastic life gave me the chance to do that in so many ways. So I was there from 24 to 34. And when I did receive the insight about moving out of that container, but still faithful to that love within, I really wanted to learn how to hear people. I didn't want to take my own language around this notion of mystical experience and create a template that was from my perspective. I wanted to step into being a listener to the work of spirit within each heart. So that's what my grad work is focused on. And then these past 14 years, I've just had the glory and the honor of standing with people in some of the most intimate places. So that's my story in a nutshell.
As you describe that, that is it classic, I don't know, that timeless mystical experience, that being lifted up, that being in adoration or in rapture or in bliss and having that go on for hours and hours. I know from reading the book that you were in a setting that was relatively supportive of that. There was a context for that. Were you ever worried or confused by that, or the people around you wondered about what the heck is going on with Kimberly for hours at a time?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I was living in Santa Cruz at the time, and the long periods that I spent, I was usually stepping into solitude. So those around me were aware, but not aware of the long duration. And I happened to be with about 5, maybe 10 other people who were experiencing really dramatic shifts in their own life. It was like this alchemical mix of human beings, and we were all in our own ways experiencing an igniting of our deeper selves and moving in new directions with that. So it was very helpful. That being said, I did seek mentorship and companionship around the experiences themselves directly. And I met with a lot of misunderstanding around that. I didn't know how to talk about it, the movement of energy, the feel of the sensations in my body, the sense of being in my body, but way, way larger than my body, the interactions that happened with spiritual entities and beings. I didn't really know how to talk about that easily. And I found most of the people I turned to for understanding were a little miffed, because I was, I was like an ordinary teenager as well. It's like probably didn't look holy enough to be having experiences that Teresa of Avila was having. How enculturated we are!
Right. That's for saints. My favorite is Marjorie Kemp, who just could not keep her darn mouth shut no matter what, right? Tremendous, right? Could not, had to speak, had to make noise, had to, oh yeah. As you were choosing a community to enter, I noticed that you chose a community with a very strict observance. And I'm wondering if you can say something about whether that, first of all, maybe what that strict observance entailed, and also did that set you free, or did it kind of put some boundaries around that mystical experience or connection?
Yeah, it did a bit of both. I think ultimately it was a great place of freedom, because I was there for the right reason. And since I was there only about this divine love, I really could have cared less about some of the other things that are just the trappings. Mm. So I was dancing lightly in my surroundings in that way. I chose the Carmelites because they were the texts. They were the mystics that fell into my hands in my late teens, and I realized that we were all friends. That's the place I found understanding. So the Carmelite call was obvious. The specific monastery that I chose was a bit more conservative than I was personally, and more conservative than many of the Carmelite monasteries. And I wouldn't have known that up front until I was in the silence with them and experiencing the life. What you get to learn on the outside and in dialogue is just a little bit of a taste. You don't really get a sense of the full scope of what you're stepping into because of it's shrouded so much in mystery. And the lifestyle, it was fantastic. We lived in North Dakota. We lived off the land. It was 20-plus nuns, real solid, large age range. So we were farming the land, and our rituals were long and full-bodied because we had the youth to support that level. And with our older nuns, we could support them. We'd get up at midnight. We would get up at 5:30 again. We'd spend another 3 hours in meditation and chant and liturgy. And then through the day, we'd have half-hour nuggets about every hour and a half. So we came to the evening when we had another hour and a half, and then another hour before we went to bed of all meditation and chant and prayer. So the lifestyle was all about immersing ourselves in the cosmological breadth of the universe, of the love affair between creator and creation. It was just all about that. And all the other tasks, all the other observances, all of that was just in service of that. Unfortunately, because of the rigor of the lifestyle on an observance level, I was able to face and experience some of my own limiting beliefs. You know, leaning into approval of authority and threads like that we grow up with as children in this, as human beings, really. and because of the observance, I was able to stand and face not only my own beauty, which undid me, but my own fears as well.
When I hear you talk about that, I hear your energy lift. I feel like I can hear your joy just in kind of even telling me what the schedule was. And I wonder that's wonderful. How did you know when it was time to go?
Oh, right. It came like this very light insight. And that's in the third book. So you'll love it when you read the whole story, because I think for all of us in our lives, there's much more daily progression that lead us to the bigger moments than we may give credit to. Things may seem like miracles and like, wow, where'd that come from? but ultimately, we're on that path all the way where the inner landscape is being tilled and shifted up to that point of receiving something great. And I had my inner landscape really worked with a lot. If you or any of the listeners go to my website, you can see my TED talk. I ended up as a nun when I was 29, building a huge monastery and balancing a life of silence with the nuns, and at the same time accepting a huge role, huge, on a multi-million-dollar project that we had no funds and I had no experience on. And in experiencing that manifestation within myself, I realized that when we say yes to spirit within, when we really step into the unknown, we have no idea what we're capable of. And we get to stand witness to that divine work happening within us and around us. But in the process of that, there was a lot of shifting in me. And ultimately, I had an experience that I can just put succinctly. Fired by that same love, in that moment of silence in my room, in my cell, I was washed of my external vows. And I didn't know it was happening. I didn't know. But I was saying yes to a level of love where at one point the inner and outer vow were married and served. They were intermingled. And the moment after that, they were separate. The outer vow didn't exist anymore. And I looked at the world completely differently, and myself and everything. So it was an incredible experience, and the peace of knowing that was right and that my container was shifting, even though I had a lot of grief around the loss of the richness of the lifestyle, I had the enduring peace that the move I was making was in utter fidelity to my inner allegiance to spirit. And I know that sounds so etheric, but it's just, it's the most honest answer I can give to it. You can get all the detail parts in the book. But
No, I can relate to that. I know that on my own path, I thought I was going in one direction and was called out of that path. And as clean as it was and as right as it was, I personally had moments of going, wait a minute, I thought I was supposed to be here. Wait a minute, I'm almost done. I've got more to do. Wait a minute. And yet when I said yes, when I followed that release, and I experienced it as well, I really relate to what you say about experiencing those two things that were together suddenly are cleanly separated. When I said yes, everything changed and kind of the new chapter began. But I couldn't have been in the new chapter if I hadn't been through what was there before. So I love what you're saying about saying yes to spirit and how that can lead you in places that you can't really even imagine you'd go.
Yes. Oh, and I thank you so much for sharing. I can hear in your words, yes. And thank you for saying yes.
And we say yes, at least I believe we say yes again and again and again. It's not just the one big yes, yes, I will step into the new path. It's all now those little yeses along the way.
Yes, it is true. And giving ourselves the respect to listen to that inner voice, that is such a maturing process in discernment to become very attuned to even sometimes it's a whisper that's calling us to a yes, and to give ourselves really the great honor and dignity to follow that. There's no greater human gift we can give ourselves and others than to support our journey with freedom.
When you connect with people who are sharing their spiritual journeys with you, do you very often connect with people who have had the depth of, I'm just going to keep saying mystical, I think, for lack of a better word, the depth of mystical transformative visionary experience that you have? Is it more common for these whisperings to be that still small voice?
I'm finding that many people that I'm connecting with have depth of experiences, but oftentimes stop short and think that because my stories might sound more dramatic, that somehow they haven't tasted that same essence. Mm. And so I'm finding that it's resonating and we're meeting heart to heart and they're coming through a lot of spiritual evolution, a lot of change, a lot of having a story, of having a structure, and then finding that structure just set them up for a bigger breakthrough. And so those sorts of things are all the same. I don't meet many people that have found themselves absorbed for hours on end in such what you might call more of a heightened or an ecstatic way. But I do believe that many of them are experiencing it in a different language and in a different way. And my spirituality has never been body-centered, and I find many people's spiritualities, oftentimes the entry point is the body. I know it has to be the body because we're here. Mm-hmm. But for me, the body is very often the fruit of my experiences and not so much my entry point.
What do you mean when you talk about that entry point being through the body?
Yes, this is where I learned a bit about that. When I was growing my own practice of leading retreats and teaching meditation, and I have my own technique as well that has developed over the years. And, you know, of course, one very effective means is breath work. And breath work, I find, is a very body-centered technique that expands us to how much we are not just the physical body, but the entry point is to focus upon a bodily function, the breath. And in that entry point, we find that we're breathed by spirits, that our boundaries are much more soluble and subtle than what we realized. And I found that a practice such as that was never where I began. I began by moving immediately into a silence that had no boundaries, and then finding the practical in it as the fruit of it. So I'm finding more and more as I work with people, breath and heartbeat and other faculties are fantastic ways to touch that universal oneness, that eternal spark that's within them. And then from there, the boundaries disappear.
I'm a big believer, and in my personal practice, that place of starting with I am here, whether that's through the breath, whether it's through opening yourself up in meditation or contemplation, your willingness to be present. It's when you start with I am here, wherever that is for you, that's where we begin to get that direct experience of the divine.
Yes. Yes. I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. I think as you connect with people and are hearing about their journeys and their and the way that they access divine wisdom or divine connection, I know that meditation is hugely important in what you teach people, how you open doors.
Yes, I have always found that moving into stillness has been like a fish in water for me. And I love helping people realize that they are quite capable of entering into silence and stillness. And of course, most who will begin to work with me say, I can never quiet my mind, or I tried, it never worked, or that. And I find all of those notions around meditation are misconceptions about what the practice is really about. And I love being to be the bearer of good news and let them know, actually, that's not what it's about. It's about this. And they can relate then to the many timeless moments that they have, even within a week, and realize that that is the state that we cultivate in this practice you might call meditation. And as it grows, the stillness within organically grows. I love it as a tool. And once you develop that little meditation muscle, you have it for your own and you don't need anybody else.
It's the gateway drug to greater presence, isn't it? You do a little bit and then you want a little bit more, and it opens up a little bit more, and it's a wonderful entry into that very fertile space.
Yes. Do you practice meditation a fair amount?
I do, as a matter of fact. I think my own sort of brand, and one of the things that I do as a teacher is try to help people find their own way into contemplation or prayer or meditation, because what might work for me may not be the right way for them. So I like to really encourage that kind of freedom about being able to tap into, get quiet and tap into what's the key for me that unlocks this gate.
Yes. I'm full on board with you.
Oh, and good. Look, we're sisters.
The gateway drug. I love that.
Well, wonderful. I'm seeing where the time has taken us. We're just about down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. My guest is Kimberly Braun. Her new book is Love Calls: Insights of a Former Carmelite Nun. There's lots more information about Kimberly and her work at KimberlyBraun.com. And if you're enjoying the program, just check in with me at my website, KarenHager.com, to leave your feedback. We'll be right back with Kimberly after this.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you, the enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free to be me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Ow.
Dude, what is
Ow.
This? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
And now, back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and we are in conversation with Kimberly Braun. Her new book is Love Calls, Insights of a Former Carmelite Nun. She is embarking on a national tour to promote awareness of the power of love and compassion in our lives. You can get more information about that tour and about all of Kimberly's work at KimberlyBraun.com. And of course, if you have a question, if you've got a comment, if something that you're hearing today raises a question for you or touches a point of resonance and you want to share how you're feeling about what you're hearing today, you are always very welcome to connect with me at KarenHager.com. Kimberly, we were talking just before the break about meditation and about that being brought into presence, being brought into silence. And I'm wondering, do you find that sometimes the way that we categorize belief, what it means to believe, the way that we separate ourselves, does that make it more difficult for people who may feel that call but might not feel like they fit into a neat category of spirituality or exploration or even belonging?
I think if we hold belief lightly as simply the inner attempt to articulate our experience of what's true, we can remain flexible and free in the meditation and practices of awareness and that. So if we understand the nature of belief as a limited construct that helps us organize our reality and understand things a bit, it can aid us in our freedom in practice, I do find, and I'm sure most everybody really does, that the collective consciousness puts this weight upon belief, making it very black and white, making it a be-all, end-all, when it's really just an attempt to explain experience. And in that, I think belief can be incredibly limiting and even destructive. I know I work with a lot of people who are healing guilt and shame that come from deeply impressed beliefs that just aren't true.
And there's that feeling too, at least as I experience it, there's that feeling too that going along with belief sometimes comes the idea that you've messed it up already, right? That you've been judged before you even say anything, right? You're doing it wrong. And I know that for me personally, when I got to seminary and began to meet people who were professed members in the religious life, I was afraid that I would immediately not be good enough, that I had already done something. You know what I mean? Nobody was going to talk to me. I found flexibility, freedom, funniness, intelligence in the people who I thought would judge me the most. I found the most free. And that's a wonderful, I think we don't see that because we just look at the surface of religious belief or religious life or vocation or any of that. Behind it is actually there can be tremendous flexibility.
Yes, I think so too. Going on an individual basis and just with those who are really open to being as authentic as possible, wow, the tools at our disposal in this world can really be helpful. Mm-hmm. Belief is one of them.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. I love those thoughts.
Mm. As you work with people who are desiring a greater presence of the divine, what would you say to someone who says, you know, I don't know, I'm really struggling here. Things are not going so well. I don't feel the divine in my life. I'm not feeling that point of connection. I don't have time to sit down and be quiet. I hear you talking, but I'm not getting it. Doesn't have relevance to me.
And that's assuming then that they're interested, right?
Oh, like, of course, because we ask the question from hunger. We ask right. That question because I believe we all have that little pilot light inside us, that little flame. And in everybody's life, in many different points, usually along the journey, we become newly aware of that little pilot light that says, find out more, go deeper. Right? I'm calling you. And so when we feel that, it's just that sometimes I think we're frustrated in how to make that connection.
I'm a big believer that, well, just dovetailing on your I am here piece, I love to be with someone and spend a little time entering into the experience of that spark with them. And I've had a tremendous honor to host and hold container and lead meditation and practices where we just sink right in. And I think that's the biggest boost that can come when you have that calling, you have that sense, it's a little, and then you also feel that the storms of life and the distractions of life and all the other pieces from the inside and the out are making you feel discouraged or that it's too hard. I think if we start just from the point of sitting a little at the table and eating the banquet, we realize that, wow, I am here right now. And if I'm here right now eating this banquet, having this great delight in oneness, then perhaps I can do it again tomorrow. And perhaps I can do it again tomorrow. And start with very small increments, 10 minutes a day, giving ourselves 10 minutes a day. And then also working with somebody who understands how to hear spirit's movements within you can be an incredible, powerful tool in increasing your capacity to live from that place. Because we can reflect back exactly where the heat seems to be with spirit. And that then, on a practical level, can take on a lot of very very, very simple attitudes and tools that can be integrated right within the busy, stressful life.
As people begin a practice of making that connection, what are some of the ways in which lives change as a result?
As we redefine ourselves or allow ourselves to be redefined from this place of greater fullness, inevitably our relationship with the entire world changes. So as I'm sure many of your listeners can relate, sometimes it's small as awaking with newfound joy instead of awaking feeling a stress and responsibility, to as large as whole life careers being inspired and changed. It inevitably changes our friendships, either the quality of them or the presence of one or another in our lives. And I find things happen with greater ease. That's what I love. I'm not about this life is supposed to be hard. I'm more about this life is meant to be easy. So what do I need to do to open to the ease of life? And even in change, even when there's sadness of loss, there can be an easy nature around that where we actually hold ourselves in that change instead of defining it as work or resisting that type of change.
Mm. It can be a wonderful practice to allow yourself to stay present with what is, no matter what is, whether that's yeah. loss or grief or pain or tremendous joy and delight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
What?
Oh,
I've made you sigh. I've made you sigh.
Yes.
One of the things that I hear sometimes for people who are feeling that tug, feeling that pull, is that they are afraid of silence or afraid of opening in case they're found wanting. And I wonder if, because you have spent so much of your prayer life in silence, if you can speak to that a little bit.
Yes. Well, first of all, I think that the fear is very understandable. Much of who and what we are is hidden from our consciousness. And because of that, we are a mystery unto ourselves. Our motivations, our essential nature, we're all just discovering these things anew each day. And it can be scary to enter into a broadness of space, such as silence, and have no clue what's going to come forward. Or maybe even not even know what to do with what does come forward. So I do understand the fear very much. At the same token, fear is only dispelled by doing it, because it's in doing it, since we're talking about embodying spirit, we're talking about embodying fullness, we can only begin to embody it. And by nature of that, our inner wisdom dissolves the fear. So it's highly unlikely that we will come to a place free of fear before we jump off the precipice.
Mm.
We can build ourselves up by reading good books, having good friends, listening to great talk shows like yours, and they can give us the mental construct to increase our confidence. But ultimately, we're alone with who we are, and it's jumping into the heart of it. And then we find that the fear was really not based in reality. And then we're really free of the fear. But it's an inward-out process.
I'm hearing you say that if we wait till we're not afraid, we'll be waiting a long time.
It's quite possible. Because most of what we're afraid of, the light can't shine on it unless we're actually in it somehow, embodying it somehow. Unless we have stepped into the unknown in some way, the unknown will still be fearful. The light can only come once we step into the unknown and it reveals itself for what it is.
As you stepped out of that religious community after 10 years as a Carmelite nun, as you stepped out of that into the, quote, real world, and that's, you have to imagine, heavy, ironic quotation marks, as you stepped out into the real world, was that a little like stepping into the unknown?
Yes. Yes and no. Primarily no, because of the peace I had, the presence and the awareness I was moving in spirit. So that never left. There was never a shadow of doubt that shined on it. That never was shaken. That never moved. That being said, on all the other layers of moving from a rural setting back into a world that had become cell phone and internet, and I entered pre-cell phone and internet, moving back into a world that was growing in its own abrasiveness, and it's almost abusiveness in the level of stimulation we force to belong in society that you have to interact with. That was all really hard. In addition, I didn't really have any identity anymore. Not that you don't lose identity when you're living a true life in silence, but I was a Carmelite, and I loved being Carmelite. I mean, I loved it. And so I stepped out into I'm here. Like, where do I go now? Who are my friends? How can I be of service? Yeah. And in a way, being even more reduced down to just the person standing next to me in the supermarket, and allowing the sense of mission of cultivating spirit take on a very, very social trappings. So there were some really difficult points. Figuring out what to wear after wearing a habit and shaving my head for years. Figuring out what to eat when you lived off the land and ate whatever was on your plate. There were so many things I had not known I would need to adapt to. So, yes. But it gives me a great compassion for, as human beings, since I have the contrast, it gives me a great compassion for when people are sharing their hearts, where they're really speaking from. You know, they have these calls and these desires, and in their chosen lifestyles, how do they live them out most fully when there are energy sucks coming from every direction? And I have a lot of compassion for that.
How can we, as spiritual beings, keep our spiritual practice, keep that desire for connection, keep that openness, that vulnerability that I believe is part of the spiritual path? How can we best maintain that in a world that is abrasive, that can be harsh?
Yes. Well, it's our call. And I think everything we can do to say my call or bust will set us up for that innocence.
I'm seeing little picket signs going up across America. My call or bust.
right. I love that. That would be great. Little back car stickers or something. we still do rationalize things away. And if we get to the point, if we allow ourselves to say, that's it, there is nothing else to my life but this. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. That is it. We set up the construct for each moment plunging us more and more into living that authentic, innocent life. That's all we need to do. I loved this quote. I was teaching at a yoga studio for many years, and in the bathroom there was this small quote on a piece of paper. Discipline is simply remembering what you want. Like, oh, how sweet is that?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not one for discipline. I don't like rigors and ideas put on things that kind of force us into this work, this notion. But if discipline is simply remembering what I want, I can't imagine anything more sweet than that.
And that takes us to that difference between imposed discipline, be here at the certain time, wear this, do this, and discipline of agreement, of acceptance, of, again, we're back to presence. Maybe everything comes back to presence. I am here because I want. I'm here because I answer. I'm here because I respond. I'm open. It's very different. I love that. That's a very different way of thinking about what discipline is.
I know it gave me a lot of happiness too.
May I ask if it's okay what your daily spiritual practice is now, how you kind of keep yourself in touch, on track?
Well, it's less formalized than a monastic rule, but the nature of my work and my wholehearted commitment to that is my construct. So simply the fact that I feel in my life I'm here to live in alignment with spirit and ignite and celebrate that in others forms my daily construct. With that, I do tend to have a fair amount of solitude in the day. I've not chosen to be married and have children, and which doesn't mean you couldn't have the solitude, but I know that makes it more challenging. So the nature of my work, the sorts of deadlines that I happen to have, are all ones that are about this mission. And then the realization inside of me that, Karen, there isn't anything else. My life isn't about anything else. And so I have nowhere else to go but be about this. And that doesn't ever leave me. I'm trying to think if it's ever really, if I've ever had to rally myself back to that. I don't think I have since I've left the monastery. It doesn't ever leave me. It doesn't mean I don't have quandaries and challenges, but that fundamental way of being in the world, it doesn't leave.
Do you believe
so that? I don't do a lot of, yeah, go ahead.
No. So you don't do a lot of trying to rally yourself, trying to bring yourself back on track, because it sounds like you live a very intentional life.
Yes, that is very true.
Do you?
There's a lot of simplicity to it, that's for sure.
But it isn't. But simple doesn't mean that it's facile, or that it's that it's not true. Simple sometimes is at the beating heart of everything, really.
Yeah, that's how it feels. It feels vibrant in that way. It feels simple, multifaceted in its simplicity.
What would you say to people who are looking at sitting with that fear and being present with the fear and yet still finding that it creeps into their lives, it creeps into their interactions, it creeps into, as they put that sign now in the back of their car that says my call or bust or vocation on board or whatever. Are there some tools that you can share for dealing with fear kind of as it crops up in our daily lives?
Yes, there is. It's on my website, KimberlyBraun.com, there's a meditation tab, and that actually goes to a portal for my Essence Meditation website. On there are a few helpful videos. And I found that when I was teaching meditation, I had developed a technique that has 3 points that actually can be brought into any aspect of your life. So if you're sitting with fear, you can actually use these 3 techniques and frame it so that your higher self, your deeper self, that's greater than the fear, can come forward. That's what we want to do. We want the higher self to come forward so that the fear is dissolved and transformed. I find that that technique that I've been working with for many years with people is very effective, and it's a 3-point process. So if you jump on my website, you can take a look at that. And I'm with you, discovering what works for you, which can be most helpful if you really invest your time in spiritual director or companion, someone who's trained in psycho-spiritual development and who is also very experiential in walking their path themselves. I think that one-on-one attention can help human beings keep the spotlight on themselves And then all the other things can upbuild. The empowering conferences, the great books, the CDs, all of the myriads of other techniques can bolster. But having someone remind you when you're speaking from your deeper self and remind you when it sounds like you're not, that can be incredibly quickening to moving through fears.
And it's a wonderful way of remembering what you want. When I've been blessed to have a couple of really marvelous spiritual directors down the years, and it does take discipline. It takes a little work to show up authentically and to know that there is someone seeing you clearly. All the parts of you, the parts that you're delighted to present to the spiritual director and the parts that you'd rather no one ever found out about ever again, that you are being seen clearly. To me, that's a wonderful kind of mirror. That's a facet of how I believe we are seen and known and loved by the divine. So I love what you're saying about finding a companion, finding a director or whatever it is in your particular tradition, somebody to bounce things off of, someone to walk with you.
Yes. Oh, so good. So true. Yes. And if any of the listeners, if you are my book tour, all the places I'm still going to be, I've been all in the Northeast. Karen, I would have totally visited you. I was in Michigan for a quick sermon at an Episcopal church.
Oh,
in
my
Barrington.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's CNI. That's wonderful. And I am Episcopalian. It's a very different, I know from reading Love Calls that you came up from a kind of a charismatic Catholic background, and I'm Episcopalian. So that's God's frozen chosen, as they've been called. It's a very, very different way of relating. We sit quietly with our hands folded, and so very different. Where else are you going to be on the tour? How can listeners catch up with you?
Yes. So on my website, on the homepage is the calendar, and we're keeping it updated. I'm a little over halfway through. I'm on my way to Ashland now for 3 events, then Portland for 3. I will be in San Diego, LA, Seattle, back to San Diego for an awesome subtle energy retreat at the end of September, and then in between then a couple smaller events like in Palm Springs. Then I am in Minneapolis at the Lake Harriet Spiritual Community. And then I will be in Miami. And then I will swing back through. I'm doing a sermon at a Unity Church in Sarasota, Florida. And then if anybody wants me from Sarasota to Boulder, that's when I'm making my way home in October. I would be happy to come anywhere for free. if the book can be for sale, so I have gas, food money, I will offer what I'm doing for free. So that's the whirlwind of the next couple months.
Wow. It sounds very intense, and it sounds like a pilgrimage. It sounds like a labor of love. It sounds like there's a lot of heart behind what you're doing, and that's beautiful. What would you like to leave the listeners with? What do you want people to know from your book, from this conversation? What would you like people to kind of take away?
I would love for everyone listening to entertain the possibility that at your very center, which has no physical center, at your very center, that you are spirit and that you are divine, and that your being an individual is an expression of that divinity. And that because that is true at all times, every moment of every day, you are being called, you are being allured, you are being ignited, you are being washed anew at every moment. And all that is asked of you is to say yes to that embrace. That's all that's asked of you. And the rest is the overflow. Whatever you do from that place is the overflow of your expression in this world. That's what I would love for people, that if you're listening now, to know and step into knowing more.
Kimberly, thank you so much for being on the program. It was a great pleasure to connect with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me and for sharing so much yourself.
Thank you. That was Kimberly Braun. Her new book is Love Calls, Insights of a Former Carmelite Nun. You can find out more about Kimberly and her work. Find out about the meditation techniques. There are videos. There's a blog. You get information about the tour. It's all at KimberlyBraun.com. And of course, you can always reach out to me with your questions, your comments, your concerns at KarenHager.com. That's also a great place to find out about connecting with me privately or upcoming classes and events. And thank you for listening today. Together we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.